फिजिकल एंड कल्चर बोथ आर लेफ्ट बिहाइंड एंड ही वन एंड हाफ.
सो 45 मिनट्स एंड 45 मिनट्स. ऑल राइट गुड. Sorry, I don't think much is required now because many of the things that I have spoken is relevant to culture also.
Yeah, this thing I found is very interesting. Here. This particular line, this relates to the theory of chance.
We do know that atomic structures store and represent discrete information.
This relates to the theory of chances.
Yes.
No, not the unlined. We started with
the interest house, the according to Planck, Maxwell and Planck, energy flows is discrete. And when the one wave will combine with the other wave, then only the energy will flow continuously. So that's a matter of chance, and that's what you are saying. Yes, think us.
Yes, correct.
So, now, as of now, because I will read this for more of time.
Yes, good.
I first myself have to understand
so much
how
so
to
much
start off with these children. What method should I take up so that?
See, there are many stories given here. So tell those stories.
Story.
That is the best thing. That's why I've given this book, not in a pedantic manner. You will see that most of this subjective conclusion can be told in the form of a story.
Right.
One more thing, sir. When we talk about very heaven and hell, we tell them that you live in the present. Don't go to your past, future, live in your present, then only you will be able to live your best.
It's a partial statement. I don't preach it as a gospel. It's not true. Many people say this, but I don't agree with them. You should have circumspection. Totality should be our
harmony.
You see, when you tell a child, be in the present, present, present means what? It's not untrue. But merely to say that is partial. You should be circumspect. Why do I teach history, for example? It's a big subject.
Mm-hmm.
When you study history, you are taking the child to the past. Now, modern times, you say that you should be futuristic in your studies. We are also teaching futuristic studies now in many universities. This subject has come up, studies of the future. Even this book which I showed you is a study in future. So it is not true that you should be only concerned with the present. It is a gospel which is given by many people who are, according to me, who do not want to tell people the totality of things. These are small little formulas given, temporarily, superficially. It should not form the basis of education. That's why this subject has to be taught properly is that there are many small little things which are told children that take up as a gospel of life. And their whole life is determined only on that. Jeevan jiyo, aram se jiyo, lekin insaniyat rakho. Whole life can be spent only in this. Khushi se raho, lekin insaniyat se raho. Whatever you mean.
If we are not hurting anybody, then it's everything we do.
Yes.
And they really believe that. A lot of young people, their philosophy.
It is such an easy, life. They do not know that ought is connected with the whole universe. They have never thought of it. What ought I to do is connected with the whole universe. This is the point of view which is not available to our young people. It is because this subject is not taught. So all the people today, am I hurting you?
No. Not at all. I'm listening to you very attentively.
Well, I'm just dramatically asking you.
Okay.
Am I hurting you? I want to see my television, Mehru. Why do you object to it? Why should I go to sleep? Am I hurting you? I am seeing the television. Mother says, tomorrow morning you have to get up early. I am hurting you now. Mama, don't disturb me. I want to see television. I am not hurting you. And Mama has no answer because they have never thought of this question, how to say. You should say, yes, yeah, I am hurt. You should be able to say, yes, I am hurt. What you are doing is not your own action alone. What happens to you, what you are doing is a great supreme concern to me. You are seeing a film today. I don't know what kind of film you are seeing. What kind of thoughts will be thrown into you. And tomorrow you'll talk to me in a way which is influenced by all those thoughts. It will hurt me. But a good parent should know how to answer that question. Should be able to not only answer but should be able to convince the child that yes, it matters. That you are not alone in the world. Nobody is alone in the world. When I ask the question, am I hurting you? It means that you are alone in the world. Are you? Nobody is in the world alone. It so happens, you are not at all alone. Therefore, this question, I am not hurting you, is not an answer. But children don't understand it. I am not hurting you, I am doing myself. Even if you think that I am hurting myself. But what does it mean, hurting yourself? Next morning when you go to have fever, say, now call the doctor. I am to be occupied with you when I should be doing something else. What about that? Nobody is alone in the world. This proposition should be known to everybody. If you tell children from childhood, then only you can meet this idea to of the children.
Children
always say, ye meri life. Ye meri life. Ye toh meri life hai, aapki aapko kyon takleef hai? It's an egoistic, wrong idea. Who says your life is yours? So shall we do culture now? Yes?
Yes. So I want to know the methodology that is to be adopted.
For culture?
Yes. You asked from the previous child that the children have brought to her the film Purava Pascha. And suppose they view it. How
good.
Does she go about it?
Why not? It's a good film.
Yes, yeah, I thought it was a very good thing. But she had questions regarding as to how to approach it.
No, it's good, Aman.
I can show to them, sir, thinking that at one point of time in that movie, they had criticized the Western culture. Whereas in the pamphlet which you've given me, it's written that we are not only appreciating our own culture, we are also taking into account the other cultures. So
No, it is good. Let people know that there are many views. Then afterwards you can give a lecture that although we saw that, but I should correct your partial view about it. Appreciation of the West does not mean that everything in the West is to be appreciated.
Another child brought Namaste London also.
Oh, I see. Oh, good.
It's quite similar.
No, it is good if you can make list of such pictures. No, it's all right. I mean, it's a good debate by itself. And to discuss this question properly,
yes,
you have to have three important considerations. First of all, the place of destruction in the universe. Because very often the word hinsa and destruction are seen to be synonymous. They are not. To destroy something is not himsa by itself. Destruction is a principle of human life, universal life. There is a constant creation, constant nourishment, constant destruction. Shiva is as important as Vishnu, as important as Brahma. Therefore, in the universal scheme of things, destruction has a place. This is the one standpoint with which we should start, basically. We should not equate destruction with violence. If we make a distinction between violence and destruction, many things will fall in the right place. Gandhi himself says, in one of his short articles on Ahimsa, you know, he has written 7 articles which are very important articles. Satya, Ahimsa, Brahmacharya, Asteya, Aparigraha, Abhaya, Swadeshi. 7 articles he has written, and there on each subject he has written 2 or 3 small pages. And there he has dealt with these questions at his utmost highest level. So if you want to understand his doctrines, you should understand this particular small book. It's a very small book, but it is the best book available on Gandhian philosophy. Now he argues very well. He comes with the grip with the question. And he says, I cannot breathe without feeling the germs. Is it a fact? What shall I do? Shall I breathe or shall I not breathe? This is the question he puts up. It's very interesting. He himself puts this question. So he says himself that killing or not killing is not the essence of the matter. The essence of the matter is whether you are asakta or anasakta. Right? So he has given a correct answer. That if you can do any action, not only breathing, even eating for example is destruction. Shall I eat or not? When I talk and give a lecture, I am destroying the ignorance. Is it good or not? I am destroying. And sometimes I can destroy with a great force. When somebody says that this is my view, Islam is the right thing, and I vehemently say, no, it is not true. Should I do vehemently or not? There are moments when it should be done vehemently. Why not? Somebody is talking ignorantly and falsely. Shall I allow falsehood to continue in the world? I should destroy it. So even forceful destruction is not violence. Now when you ask the question, what is then the asakta and anasakta? What does it mean? It is there that Gandhi fails to answer. He admits that if destruction were the only thing to be avoided, you can't even breathe. And therefore you should stop breathing. Which is not practicable, which is not demanded either. The whole scheme of the world is such that constant creation, constant nourishment, constant destruction is the very principle of life. Then what is the principle of Ahimsa there? So he gives a correct answer. Main point about Ahimsa is Anasakti. What is that Anasakti? That is the question. And this is a very difficult question. What is anasakti? Therefore, he called his book on yoga, on Gita, Anasakti Yoga. He tries his whole life to define what is anasakti. You cannot be anasakta unless you become universal, cosmic. And all attachments are gone. What does it mean? All attachments gone means I should have no relationship with you. Should I not to talk to you affectionately, lovingly? To love and yet not to have attachment, what does it mean? It is here, these questions are difficult to answer. He didn't answer these questions. That's why there is a lacuna. You can't answer all the situations. As Sri Aurobindo said, my mother India is laid naked on the earth, and the monster is choosing, is feeding himself on the breasts of my mother. What should be my attitude towards the monster? What should I do? Shall I say wonderful? I shall do nothing. Anasakta, aspraha. And do nothing about it. What is my action? Shall I not take my sword from my sheath?
Destroy.
And just strike him and finish it on the spot. Should I not do it? This is the idea behind Sri Krishna's asking Arjuna. The most important word in Gita is Vigata Jvaraha. Do all your actions Vigata Jvaraha. Anasakta.
Yes. Without passion.
There should be no fever. Without fever, do an action. It is a very difficult condition. Unless you become supracosmic, it cannot happen. That's why she said, whether you talk on the mind level or the supreme level, unless you are supracosmic, what is Buddha's ahimsa? There is a tremendous difference between Gandhi's consciousness and Buddha's consciousness. Tremendous. Buddha lived in the transcendental supracosmic consciousness. And that silence which is unruffled. There is no reaction at all. And yet, see the action that he did. So when Sri Krishna says, I am not the doer and yet doer of all actions. I am not the doer, akartaham. And yet all actions proceed from me. In that, what are the actions? All actions are at once of creation, nourishment and destruction. There is no world, no action without destruction. No action without the birth. No action without nourishment. All the three are the processes of work. So, destruction or not destruction is not the important problem. With what consciousness you are doing? When Sri Krishna told Arjuna, here is Duryodhana. If you don't destroy him, he is going to destroy millions of children of tomorrow. The culture that is going to develop in this country, already it is developed under his impress, he will create only aggressive human beings here. And he is not amenable to reasoning. I told him, I went to speak to him also, and he tried to capture me and put me into prison. So he doesn't want that method at all. Therefore, the only method, Vigata Jvaraha, but destroy him. Anasakta. You remain absolutely like Like breathing, what do you do in breathing? You don't want to kill the germs, but you cannot do without it. But this question that the children raise is a very important question. It should say that every situation should be examined in depth. There is no ready-made answer. The important point is that your consciousness should be non-violent. Do not act out of anger. Not act out of hatred. Do not act out of personal interest. Do not act for out of prejudice. These are the disabilities of consciousness. Then, if you first of all remove all this, then you ask a question. What is the situation? What does it demand? If there are situations where, as your child said, that for self-defense, what do I do? Even for self-defense, sometimes it is not good to retaliate.
If it can be avoided.
Also, it... You see, for example, there is a great statement of Christ. Resist not the evil. What does it mean? Evil is on me. And he says, resist not the evil. So even if I'm being killed, you should accept it. Resist not the evil.
This should not be accepted by the children.
But this is what Christ has said. I'm only saying.
Immediately there.
I don't know. It's all right. Good. No. I'm only saying that if you want to study the aim of life,
yes.
One of the aims which has been given by Christ is this. Resist not the evil. You must understand that all these great maxims, they convey something. When a child is playing with you and child sometimes slaps you tightly, you may be hurt even. Your eye may be for permanently may be finished. Kiss the child. What is that consciousness? There are some moments where you don't resist merely because you are not resisting. The monster becomes a saint. Because you are not resisting him, the monster comes to you to kill you. Say, yes. It's transformed.
So, you have to tell us what we have to do for culture. She is bringing urgency.
No, I was... Actually, I thought I am discussing with you. You raise a question, no? I am answering your question, my dear. Yes? Now, let me answer. No, wait a minute. I'll tell you very briefly. First of all, as far as children are concerned, do you know that Tagore composed 2,000 songs?
I have the collection, both in Bangla as well as in...
All the 2,000 you've got, huh? Good. Have you got translation of them into Hindi? English. Hindi also you get them done.
Yes.
Alright, that is what you should... At least select some of them. Rim Jim, for example. Alright, huh? Anyway, some of the poems. Now, you should create in your children love for this music. This music, because Rabindra Sangeet, people do not realize in our country, is unique music. You have, how nice. So kindly make children love it. How you love, make them love is a different matter. But make children love. You know, speciality of this music is that when you listen to it properly, you feel you come to your home. It is birds returning to the nest. And the happiness that you get when you return to the nest. All the songs of Tagore have got this special quality. This is the music. He's a homecoming bird. You just see again now, hear these songs in this way. When you hear his music, you feel you are coming to your nest. You enter into your being, there are strings of your heart which begin to vibrate, of your heart, inner heart. It's no more sensations, it is not feelings. The strings of the heart, they begin to vibrate. The tunes arise as it were from there. That is the speciality of this great music of Tagore. And that is why I would like your children to listen to this music. It's very important. All right, huh? Can you teach your children what is the speciality of English poetry? Have you read the book called Future Poetry by Sri Aurobindo? I think you read that book. Your program of life. All right? It's a very difficult book, therefore I'm saying program of your life. Then we shall have a seminar here, all right? Yes? Not only you, we shall have many teachers. I'll require, she doesn't agree actually. I want all your teachers to come here. Then now, there is a need to have a seminar on future poetry, and I'm sure many teachers would like to have that seminar. So anyway, when you come to that point, we shall have seminar here on future poetry. All right, huh? Because English poetry has a tremendous potentiality for the future. I don't know if you have also something of Sanskrit poetry. You know, there are 2-3 good musical pieces of Sunil. There are English tunes, English words, and also Sanskrit words. You get all the musical pieces from Sri Aurobindo Ashram, just as you go for Tagore. Like that, there are beautiful musical pieces produced by Sunilda. Beshi Bhalo. Very beautiful. It's a good idea. Kindly write it down as a part of it. Like many Bengali films, I have seen many Bengali films which are very nice. Very nice, like Mahanagar, for example. It's a great Mahanagar. Kapurush, Mahapurush. They are very sad films, but see, Kapurush, Mahapurush is also a very nice film. Many beautiful Bengali films you have. I think Bengali films are the best in India. And so much of taste in them.
Bengali music?
Yes, so much in it. So much beautifulness. And children should be able to appreciate it and love it. So it is very good indeed if you can do it. You should, now this suggestion you keep in mind, that when you show a regional film, kindly bring out the essence of the film so the children understand it properly.
Yes.
Or even if you don't tell them in advance, afterwards you ask those questions. Tell me what was my purpose. It can be a good question. Yeah, quite right. It's very nice indeed. You know, this book has got 9 parts. The first part is Mystery of the Human Body. I would like every child of your school not only to know anatomy and physiology, but also the mystery of it. It's a dimension which is not normally emphasized. And this particular section, what I try to bring out is the mystery of the human body. When there is a wound, how is it that white corpuscles rush out automatically to heal your wound. It's a mystery. That there is a constant repair of the body going on, it's a great mystery. The automatic synchronization that is taking place. When I look at you, I have two images of you, but they are synchronized so that I have only one view of your face. Why is it so? It's a mystery. The mystery of the thumb, for example. Thumb is the creation of the whole human civilization. Animals can't create a civilization because they don't have a thumb. It is human beings who have got a thumb, and thumb makes it possible for it to manipulate things properly. Other animals can't use their fingers properly because they don't have the thumb. In one of the parts, it is given here, in Alexis Carroll's book, this mystery, Man the Unknown, you read there, it's a very interesting article, Man the Unknown. Then next is health and nutrition. Ultimately, what I want in your school is that there should be, for every child, by the time he comes out of the school class 12, he should be well acquainted with all the 9 sections. I know it is not a part of your syllabus, but you dovetail all this by exhibitions and you can combine with culture department, and as a part of the culture, this knowledge of the human body is very important. There should be a kind of a atmosphere in the school where children do feel that human body is mysterious.
Put up charts and models in.
That's good. But more than charts, you just take one simple fact like white corpuscles coming at the time of a wound. Only one little thing, one wonder of the body. So like that, there are many wonders. Each time one wonder you put up and use. To put all the wonders at one time is to take away the wonder of wonders. If you go on putting wonder after wonder, then there is a focus upon each wonder, and that is, pedagogically, it is more effective. So think of it. Alright, huh? Then the question of health and nutrition. Even such a simple question as, define health. What is the meaning of health?
Absence of disease.
That is a big question mark. What is health? I don't know myself, but I'm only asking the question, what is health? In a sense, you might say healthy body is that which doesn't ask the question, what is healthy? What is the meaning of well-being? That is also a question. That is the essence. Well-being is a question. So anyway, this is a question which I've discussed in this chapter. In this whole section, what is health? You see, the very A is what is health. No? So there are many good texts I have collected together. About sleep, for example, it's a very interesting point. Whether children sleep well or not. Anyway, you should see that importance of sleep. That's how they have given a section there on sleep. Even the idea of fitness of the body is a subtle idea. What is fitness of the body? Everybody has got its own fitness, its own standard of fitness. And there are fitness tests. I don't know, you have got fitness tests. There are also standardized tests.
Yes.
I don't know if you have got that.
I've got a couple of tests. There's a society called the Duke of Edinburgh Awards. From the principle, they have prescribed certain physical test measurements here. That I have got.
So
I don't know whether some standards which relate to the Indian condition.
I think you should really create, if you as in charge of it,
yes,
we should create some physical tests which are determined. Actually, even if you contact WHO, for example, and you ask them what are the standard, Indian standard fitness standards, they might help you. So kindly contact them.
I have one index that, PFI index, physical fitness index.
Oh, I see. You got it.
Yes.
So you can apply it and then you should see that larger number of children get tests. It is good for a child to know where he stands. It gives a good stimulation to the child. Even because many children in India, they like games, but they don't like gymnastics. And yet gymnastics are very important, because gymnastics are very boring. And games are very interesting. You gain, you fail, excitement, running, this, etc. In gymnastics, there is no great prize. It is a hard work, push-ups and sit-ups and so on. So you should get them interested in it. Every child should know actually what are the different ways by which exercises can be given to the body. And that is the one of the important part number 4 deals with that question. Physical education and excellence of the human body. And there you have this gymnastics, athletics, swimming, and games, both Eastern and Western. And it is here that yoga has its place. It is to attain health, strength, and capacity of the body. All that, the entire yogic system is based on that. In the Western method of physical education, the stress is given on jerks. In Indian system of physical education, relaxation. You relax your muscles, relax your different organs of the body, and then you put every part of the body under a very special kind of stress of pranayama, the breath, so that that part becomes oxygenated. Supply of oxygen in different parts of the body, that is the essence of yogic exercises, physical yogic exercises.
And that's helping our endurance work.
Yes, you are right. That is why Indian...
Many more games required endurance so much.
Yeah, very much.
So
even in a football, for example, or in basketball, when you have to run at a stretch and almost breathlessly, swimming also requires breathlessness. And there are many aspects of our life where the keeping control over the breath is very important. So here I have given lot of examples. You see, physical education in ancient India, then ancient Olympics, and then modern Olympic Games. It's a very good comparison I have made and shown so many Olympic Games which have been played and what will be the results and so on. It's a very interesting chapter if you read it. And if you bring to the children's idea, because today modern children are very interested in Olympics.
Yes.
Even information-wise, they may not do gymnastics themselves,
no,
but they want to know about it. So through that you can inspire children to do it also afterwards. So, you see, then list of Olympics in recent times and of Olympics events in each discipline. Then Asian Games also, there was a special program of Asian Games. Then we have given some direct examples, dialogues, you know. This book is not only descriptive book, it is also interesting stories are given in this book. To make physical education interesting, you take out the stories from this book and you narrate them. Some dialogues which are given here also, you put up this dialogue and highlight it. Then, bodybuilding and strength. And this is, for example, Arnold. The whole, there is a good chapter on Arnold, where he has given advice to the children. It's very interesting, you read that. Arnold's advice to students, because he became Olympian and a world champion several times. Now, of course, he's a governor in USA. So this man has done a lot of achievement in his life. Many people believe that if you devote a lot of time in your physical education, you may do well in sport, but in life you are a failure because you have no other, you don't acquire many capacities of life, which is not true. Then there's boxing and then there's cricket. I have given you the story of one of the greatest ancient cricketers of India, Ranjit Singh. It's a very interesting story of Ranjit Singh. He was a Jam Sahib of Nawanagar. Sir Gardiner has written a very beautiful article on him. You make these children of class 9, 10 read that chapter. Jam Sahib of Nawagal, of page number 374. Yes, Ranji Trophy is after his name. 374. The whole story is given there of Jam Sahib of Nawanagar. One of the sentences that, alas, he's 40 and fat. It was written when he became 40 years old. He became fat. Alas, he's 40 and fat. It's a very interesting statement he has made. So that children should know that you become 40 but don't become fat. He was the king of cricket in his time. In the whole world, he was the king of cricket. But the author says, alas, now he will no more be dead. He is 40 and fat. Then even dance is a part of physical education I have shown here. And given the story of Anna Pavlova, it's also a very interesting story. You should read that story. And even if you can get the film, there is a film available. Anna Pavlova. You try to get that film also, it's very nice. Anna Pavlova. Then I come to number 5, profounder aspects of physical education. How physical education is important for moral education and for spiritual education. They are profounder aspects. It's not only for health. Even for moral education, physical education is important. So you read this statement of Sri Aurobindo called Message. That particular chapter gives you the idea of what Sri Aurobindo said upon the profounder aspects of physical education. And then this chapter, the 4 austerities and 4 liberations, that is also very interesting. What is austerity? Our internal idea of India's physical education is austerity, tapasya. Development of endurance is a very important aspect of physical education. How much can you endure? Endure hunger, for example. Endure pain. In life, sometimes these endurances are very important. Otherwise, a slight pain and the child begins to cry and cannot endure it enough. Part 6 deals with courage of the handicapped. So what is courage, for example? I have given here the example of Roosevelt. You know, Roosevelt became president of India four times, of America, but he had polio, so he couldn't walk. So how he dealt with his polio, it came up in his life. He was struck by polio.
Even P.S. Chandrasekhar.
Yes.
The great bowler India ever has produced. And he was affected with the greatest bowler ever India has produced.
So these examples are very interesting and should be given to students. And there is a beautiful story, a knots on a counting rope. That film you should get from Oroville, no? It's a film on this subject. It's a story of a blind boy. You have seen this film? No. It's a film of a blind boy who doesn't know that he's blind. And he's brought up as if he sees. He didn't know that people can see or cannot see. He thought everybody must be like him. Unless he's told he's blind, he also believes that everybody must be like him. And how he's able to ride the horse and all that. See, it's a very interesting story. You get this film. We have made a film in Oroville. This film, you ask them, they will send you a copy of it. Huh? Yes, oh yes, you can ask her. Knots on a counting rope. Then next chapter is on adventures and achievements. And there I have given examples of conquering the Himalayas by Norgay. And there is another one from Crystal Horizon. It's a story of Messner. And another is Callahan from Adrift. It's a story of a man who was traveling by his boat. And then for days and days he swims. And what a tremendous endurance and capacity, ultimately reaches the shore. It's a true story. It is not a fiction. So it's also a very interesting story. But you know, some bodies are capable of doing it. It should not be generalized. No, should not be generalized because there are many bodies. No, there are some bodies which are capable of bearing automatically. There are special bodies. And they are not affected by stings. Not that they are not.
Not yet, not
no, anymore. But one, he should not be, I would not advocate such bizarre things.
Yeah.
There are some human beings who are capable of doing it because their bodies are insensitive. A very sensitive body may not be able to do it, and there is not an incapacity. It's a greater capacity. Sensitivity. No, it's true. There are many people who are insensitive. They don't feel at all anything. And this part 8 is very important. Body reaching out beyond itself. And there, I have spoken of Hatha Yoga, Pradipika. You see, there is a very important point to be made. Yoga does not mean Hatha Yoga. Yoga is not equivalent to pranayama. It is not asana. If you read the whole of the Gita, Karma Yoga has nothing to do with pranayama and asana at all. And if children have wrong ideas, they will not see what is yoga in the Gita. Yet it is the supreme yoga which is described there. So we should take out from the minds of the children that there is no yoga until the consciousness of the individual strives to unite with the transcendental. Unless this is done, there is no yoga. essence of yoga is uniting. Uniting what? It is uniting the human consciousness. Pranayama is not yoga, it is simply a physical exercise which is done under the name yoga, but it is, people, children should not think that that is yoga. We should make it very clear, yoga means uniting the consciousness with transcendental consciousness, with cosmic consciousness. Unless individual, cosmic and transcendental are united, there is no yoga. But there are many things which may help you to do it. In that sense, everything in life is yoga. Even eating is yoga, sleeping is yoga, talking is yoga, studying is yoga, hearing music is yoga. Everything is yoga because ultimately everything contributes to your consciousness to be lifted up.
Yesterday, Abhu, there was the Suti Sita here who asked.
Who?
Suti Sita Mishra, who's gone now. I think she was the one who asked a specific question. He said, I need to understand consciousness. And here, that you have mentioned the individual consciousness, the cosmic consciousness, and the transcendental consciousness. If you could just give it two more minutes and explain to them the three levels of consciousness, that would be a huge, huge learning for them.
Actually, what is individual consciousness, I described a little earlier when I said that the speciality of individual consciousness is the development of ought consciousness. I ought to do this. You really come to understand what is individual. The individuality of the individual is experienced when you face a problem of ought. What should I do? When this question becomes very concrete, then you begin to ask, what am I? Now, the individual consciousness is individual because it is a mood. M-O-D-E is a mood. There is a difference between the whole and the mood. The entirety, the globe, for example, you take a circle, any line that you draw in the circle is a mood. M-O-D-E. The whole circle is a totality. Now, in the universe, universe is a totality. Imagine it's a full circle in which each one of us is a mode. So, individual is definable in terms of being a specific kind of mode. You and I are individuals because you are a special mode, I'm a special mode. And I come to experience this mode, experience, because this mode is not normally experienced. When I touch my body, it's also a kind of experience, but I don't experience what I can call me, the I consciousness, the real I consciousness. Except when I face myself, what is called existential condition. It's a very philosophical word, existential. What is existential condition? One of the examples I give normally is a girl being invited by a boyfriend, come to the garden and meet me. For the girl to decide whether she should go or not is an existential problem. If she doesn't go, she loses a chance of getting that boy, whom she loves perhaps. Out of shyness, out of many difficulties, she may not go. She also has not decided whether she should really build up a connection with that boy or not. If she says yes, it means that it gives a signal to the boy that you are interested in him. And then he will try to develop his connection with you. Whether you should allow him to develop that consciousness or not is a question mark. How do you decide? What ought you to do? Should you say, yes, I will come? Should you say, no, I will not come? That condition which is put down is called existential condition. Where you really experience that you exist. As long as you do because others tell you to do, you don't experience it. My father wants me to do it, therefore I'm doing it. You don't feel the pressure. My teacher has asked me to read, I'm reading it. There's no pressure on me. But the pressure of your being comes when everything else depends entirely upon now the decision that you make. That is existential moment. And that comes best when you have the decision regarding ought. What ought I to do? Now, as I said, in every not ought, you come to decide with some kind of element of universality. I give the example of, you never like to be done unto you what you do not demand others to be done to others. So this connection between the individual ought and its connection with the universal is automatic, and you understand what it really means, universality. These are the first elementary experiences of the individual and the universal. There's some connection between you and the universal. Now, if you examine the universal consciousness itself, you find that that consciousness has no beginning and no end. It's a speciality of universal consciousness. That's how we have the idea of anadi and ananta. Vaishvik chetana. Vaishvik chetana. This consciousness of no beginning, no end is a speciality of, just as individual consciousness has something to do with the mode of consciousness. It's a speciality of the individual. A mode of consciousness in which there is a centrality. When you take an ought to come to experience your center, which is connected with the universal. Therefore, no individual consciousness is experienced as individual unless it is united with the universal in a very special manner. But universal consciousness itself has this special characteristic of having no beginning and no end. You see anything in the universe, it can go on past if you work out the past of 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 the past. It is unending. There is no point where you can say it is now, although we speak of Big Bang as if it is the first. But then the question is from where that bang came. That question we don't normally ask, but we should ask. From where that thing came which exploded? How did that happen? What was before that? That question remains. So it is timeless in the sense of eternity which is without beginning and end, in that sense timeless. But there is another sense that is now transcendental, which is truly timeless and spaceless, in which there is no beginning or end. The question of beginning or end doesn't apply to it. And without that foundation, space and time are not possible. Now, this requires a process of contemplation. What I told you just now in three sentences, if you really want to be convinced of it, you should have contemplation of it. Contemplation means you repeat whatever I said now, step by step, and connect step by step quietly, and try to understand it gradually. That is a process of contemplation. As I said, you come to no beginning, no end. From there you jump into there is no beginning or end at all. It's a jump. There is a kind of a leap. How do you come to that leap? Supracosmic is that leap. Supra, you go beyond the cosmos. Cosmos has beginning and end. No beginning, no end. But the supracosmic has also no beginning or end in the sense that it has no time or space at all there. They may not begin, they are rooted in it. They don't begin. So this is the transcendental consciousness, and yoga is basically uniting that individual consciousness with the universal and the transcendental. Unless that happens, there is no yoga. All else is held to yoga. And therefore, even gymnastics is yoga. It is not only pranayama is yoga. Even in gymnastics, you have to do pranayama actually. It is simply we give a name to pranayama because of a certain speciality we want to develop. But there is no physical education without pranayama. It is essential in all exercises of physical education. Pranayama is involved. So, we must make it clear to our children, because our children normally grow up with the idea, haan, aap yog kar rahe na. But unless there is this contact of the individual with the universal and transcendental and an effort towards it, there is no yoga. It is only help to yoga. And there everything is, even artists, even hearing Rabindra Sangeet is also yoga. Everything, there is nothing which is not yoga. The whole is also yoga. Listening to music is yoga. Yes. Yeah, very right. It is, that's what Sri Aurobindo calls all life is yoga. Yes. Yeah, introduction to yoga, you might say. Part is still, may mean that it's a part of the totality of the heart of yoga. It is not, they are only introduction to yoga. All right, huh? Introduction to yoga. Which other things also can be called an introduction. Studying a good book also is yoga. Anything yoga, the essence of yoga as an introduction is any effort at concentration is yoga. Introduction to yoga is concentration. Wherever there is an effort at concentration is preparation to yoga. With awareness. Good. Yeah, with awareness. Excellent. So, now the last portion, the perfection of the body. I think you should read this chapter 4-5 times. It's the greatest essay written on this subject. This is the meaning of perfection of the body. And our children should know that their bodies should grow towards that perfection, this ideal. And one day you should put up a good exhibition on perfection of the body. After 1 year, you read this nicely. All right, then you tell me, if you put up such an exhibition on perfection of the body, I will agree with Anjaliji to come one day to Lucknow. All right, so you read this book nicely, all right, huh? And let children share this knowledge, which is here.
Of course.